strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Don't forget, this hour, at some point during this hour, we are going to play a sounder. You'll know it when you hear it. And that means I'm going to give you a code word. And then you're going to text 411-923 with that code word. And you're going to be entered to win Suns playoff tickets. We're going to do it again as a station. We'll do it again in the 3 o'clock hour and then in the 5 o'clock hour. Your chance to win Suns playoff tickets. So be listening this hour. You don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen in this hour. A judge declares a mistrial in the Nogales Rancher murder case. If you don't know, if you aren't paying close attention, if you haven't seen a lot of this, I want you to hear a little bit about this. This is Alex Stone from ABC News and the basics about a rancher in southern Arizona accused of murder.
George Kelly is a 75-year-old rancher who lives along the U.S.-Mexico border. He was charged with second-degree murder and aggravated assault for shooting and killing a 48-year-old migrant who was on his property in 2023. The migrant was in a group that ran when they saw Border Patrol agents about 150 yards away. Kelly allegedly used his AK-47 to fire at the migrants, killing the man. The defense claimed Kelly was protecting himself and his wife and only fired warning shots.
And so that was the defense. Now, you got to remember, the prosecution has to prove that you've done something wrong. You don't have to prove your innocence. But in their defense, what they said, what the Kelly said, was we were in fear for our lives. We heard a shot. He responded with warning shots from his porch. He never fired a gun at anyone, nor did they ever find a bullet that killed anyone that matched his gun. So he said he didn't shoot at anyone. Specifically, he saw people on his land dressed in camouflage with backpacks, which led him to believe, with much of his experience with his years of being a rancher at that part of Arizona, that there was drug traffic and rip crews. If you don't know what a rip crew is, I will tell you it is one of the things that law enforcement is most fearful of. Rip crews are rival gangs that rip each other off. You think they don't have any concern for the human traffic they're bringing across? They have no concern for human life whatsoever. So they will get the drop on a rival crew that is muling drugs into the country. Maybe they've got money, whatever they have, and they will wait and they will ambush them and they will steal everything from them. They get very violent. It is an all-out war. It's like a gang war in our streets, but it's happening along the border in southern Arizona. Now, the prosecution said that Border Patrol and law enforcement didn't find any evidence at that time of rip crews in the area, although it happens at the border very regularly. Again, the assumption is that Mr. Kelly is innocent until proven guilty. They never found a bullet that killed this guy that matched his gun, or I don't think they ever found the bullet that killed him anyway. The rancher said, I fired into the air as a warning shot because we heard shots in our home. They feel like prisoners in their own home. They're isolated. They're in the middle of nowhere. Law enforcement isn't close by, which is why they own a gun. Again, not a rare thing. And we're not talking about a hunting rifle. We're talking about an AR-15 or an AK-47, whatever he had, a semi-automatic rifle. If you talk to ranchers, and I've talked to many of them at the southern part of the state of Arizona, when they ride their land, a rifle is a part of what they carry, because many times they're first responders. When they find people, they're at death's doorstep. They have a first aid kit. They carry gallons of water because they find groups of people many times that have been abandoned by human traffickers. So what they do is they protect human life. They give them water if necessary, food if necessary, first aid if necessary. Then they call in the Border Patrol and they call in the authorities to get them to a hospital to get them well. So let's take away the idea, and this is the question why you would have to ask, and this is why the question I would have to ask. Why would a rancher who has been living in Arizona for as long as he has, on that land for as long as he has, why would he shoot at someone that was over 100 yards away from him? He has a 170-acre ranch. The person that they found dead hours later was well over 100 yards from his house. Why all of a sudden would a 70-something-year-old man open fire from his patio at someone and then call the police, call the authorities? That first question, why, is a big hill to climb. It makes a lot more sense, as they said they heard a shot. And their belief is, the defense belief is, this was some kind of a confrontation between rivals and possibly a rip crew. That is a reasonable thing. And the jury's a hung jury. They could not come to a unanimous decision. It wasn't a not guilty, but it was a hung jury. So now the government has to decide in that county, Santa Cruz County, they have to decide whether or not they want to go to the expense to retrying this case. Will they put him on trial again? I'm certainly not in favor. I don't care if you've committed a crime, that doesn't mean you deserve to die. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. But you also can't demonize or convict somebody because you have an assumption on the other side of this of why they would do something. The idea in your mind that ranchers have a bloodlust and they want to hurt people, I think, is a false narrative. Just to, like, it's the other side of it. The other side would be, just because they're crossing the border illegally doesn't mean they are there with drugs. They may just be people looking for work. You're 100% right about that. You're 100% right. Assuming that they are there and they are murderous or they are dangerous is a poor assumption. Just like assuming that this rancher was looking to hurt somebody is a poor assumption. So now let's deal with the facts. They never found a bullet connecting this guy's gun to anything. He said he shot into the air. They called the authorities. And he said he was afraid for his wife and his family. Even with that being said, he never leveled the gun at a person and shot at them. So how do you get a conviction out of that? The bigger implications, though, and the bigger question is about the insecurity at our border, the lack of border security. There's a story in front of me that says experts say that even if you secure the border, even if you fortify the border, people are still going to come. And that's 100% correct. So what has to be is a combination of two things. The likelihood that you're not going to gain access to the U.S. if you come to the border is one deterrent. And the other is that if you do get access to the U.S. and you're able to cross into the U.S., we have tougher restrictions on how you can file for or ask for asylum. And it's going to be a much higher standard, and there isn't going to be a long wait time. There is going to be an initial confrontation or consultation where you are going to be asked a series of questions that you're going to have to answer yes or no to all of those questions. And if you don't have the right answer to all of the above, you are sent back across the border and you are going to deal with it from remain in Mexico policy. It does two things. Number one, it puts the onus back on the nation of Mexico, because now you've got people living in shanty towns inside your country. So you are now a lot less likely to allow them to get all the way to your northern border, our southern border. But it also sends a message around the world that we have a big wide door, that we want as many good people to come to this country and thrive in the American system as we possibly can get. And we want that to be what we stand for. But we will no longer convolute legal and illegal immigration. If you're doing it the wrong way, you're going to be sent back. If you do it the right way, we're going to make it as easy as we possibly can to vet you and welcome you into this country. What am I saying that is outrageous? What am I saying that's xenophobic? The answer is nothing. But if you think that just is building a wall or doing something in that regard is going to solve the problem, I agree with you. It will not. It's got to have, along with it, policies in place that say to people, if you are somehow able to get through that wall, over that wall, under that wall, around that wall, whatever it is, and you make it in, and you approach somebody from the federal government and say, I'm here because I'm claiming asylum, you're not necessarily going to get the access you're looking for. All right, time to catch you up in just a few moments. We're going to get you caught up with the biggest news stories of the day. It's a segment we call Did You Hear This? Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get caught up on our biggest news stories. We call it Did You Hear This?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Arizona Superior Court Judge Thomas Fink declared a mistrial in the case of a rancher accused of murdering a migrant who was on his property near the U.S.-Mexico border. jurors were unable to reach a verdict in the case.
The migrant was in a group that ran when they saw Border Patrol agents about 150 yards away. Kelly allegedly used his AK-47 to fire at the migrants, killing the man. The defense claimed Kelly was protecting himself and his wife and only fired warning shots.
How does this case illuminate the issues at the southern border?
I think it's a couple of different ways. I think, first of all, it shows you the dangers that the ranchers have been living with for a very, very long time. It also shows you the frustration because no one deserved to die just because they're crossing the border if that was the case. But the ranchers' defense was that they heard a shot. They were concerned. They saw people in camouflage with backpacks. The assumption that these people were drug traffickers and maybe there was a rip crew out there. They say they fired warning shots. They never found a bullet that killed this person that matched. I don't think they ever found a bullet at all, but they didn't find a bullet that matched the rancher's gun. And so how do you say that this person is guilty of a crime if you don't have those pieces of the puzzle? What's frustrating about this is these occurrences, these crossings across land, the fears of the ranchers are real, and it happens every day. Until we secure the border, you're going to have fearful people worried about their families, and unfortunately, stuff like this happens. And in this case, if it was a rip crew and it was somebody else, another migrant crew or what you ever want to call them, cartel, you're talking about a murder on his land, which is scary for his family as well.
More protests over the Israel and Hamas war have broken out on college campuses, this time at some prominent Ivy League schools.
The protests, calling for colleges to divest from companies with ties to Israel, now spreading to other campuses. At least 45 people arrested at Yale University. At NYU, a standoff with police after protesters were told to vacate a campus plaza.
Where do you draw the line between free speech and breaking the law?
Well, it's that. Yeah, that's the thing, is when you're blocking traffic, when you're walking down freeways, when you become violent, when you begin to do damage, then I think that's where you have stepped over the line. The right to freedom of speech and the freedom of assembly is something I have defended even with people I disagree with, whether it was Black Lives Matter rallies or otherwise. You have a right to assemble. You have a right to have your voices heard in public. What you don't have a right to do is disrupt or threaten other people. And that's exactly what these groups have been doing. They have been getting louder, which is fine, but they are becoming more and more violent and making threats. And they're tying up traffic. They're tying up freeways and roadways. It's uncalled for. It's unnecessary. And it should be stopped. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at 11:20 to catch you up on the major headlines.
The United States Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday on whether a local government can fine homeless people for sleeping in public parks. Some of the justices seem to struggle with whether governments can ban homeless encampments.
The court's conservative majority seemed inclined to uphold Grants Pass, Oregon's law. But Trump appointee Brett Kavanaugh pointed to those who might go to jail for not sleeping at a shelter that's already at capacity.
You still don't have a bed available. So how's this help?
Liberals were outspoken in their opposition to the ordinance.
Will this case criminalize homelessness?
I don't think it's going to criminalize homelessness. Being homeless is not a crime, but you have to be able to punish the crimes that go along with people's behaviors, and that's the problem. There is a fine line that can be walked and people understand it, but it's going to take common sense. The big question I have about the Supreme Court is, are they going to judge because they like or dislike the law when a justice says, I don't like this law, or are you judging what the Constitution says? Does a local jurisdiction have the right to make it? I think there are two different factors there. Taking away the ability for a local jurisdiction to legislate something because of a unique need in that district or in that city or in whatever is going to be a big problem, because you're going to have unique situations that have to be handled uniquely. You look at the box Phoenix has been in here. Phoenix had a federal law they thought they were following, and then a local judge said another thing, and then there was a lawsuit from the ACLU. It was not helpful in fixing this problem whatsoever. And more than anything else, we need ways to fix the issue, and it's unique to every jurisdiction.
A new NBC poll shows only 64% of voters have high interest in November's election. This is technically a 20-year low at this point in a presidential race, with a majority of people holding negative views of both former President Trump and President Biden. Arizona political consultant Stan Barnes told Arizona's Morning News why this might be.
There's just a lot of general disgust and a lot of general upsetness about where we are as a country on both sides of the aisle. And that just can't translate translate to enthusiasm. That translates to no enthusiasm.
Will we see a low voter turnout across the country in November?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a low voter turnout, but I think you're going to have more people than normal kind of leaving it blank or writing in a different name. I think there are going to be a number of protest votes. And the unfortunate thing here is if you look back, when was the last time you felt like you were voting for someone? Now, there are hardliners out there on both sides in favor of Biden and Trump. But if you think about it, was it Bush in 04 for his reelection? Was it Obama in his reelection against Mitt Romney? Were those the last times? Bill Clinton for his second term was a time when people were voting in favor of somebody. When we elected Ronald Reagan for his first term, it was a vote against Jimmy Carter and the policies that were there that anything would be better. Reagan's second term was 49 states for victory, showed we were voting for something then. It's happened in both parties, but is this an election where it's voting against someone more than it's voting in favor of someone? And I will tell you, the American people deserve to have candidates that they can get behind, that they really believe in, and that they really trust on both sides of the political aisle. I'm just not sure everybody feels that way about these two candidates, and this is what this poll is showing people. Julia, good job as always. That poll interested me. The idea lack of interest shows that people are just tired. I think they're tired of the fight. They're tired of watching the nonsense. And I think they're looking for people and real leaders to step up. And I hopefully that's going to be the result of what's going on. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk about the economy. I started with this earlier. How much money does it take to bring home $100,000 a year and why it's important? But more important to that is how many people believe they're never going to own a home. We'll talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
You know, I'm in a good mood. Let's not wait. Let's just do it right now. Let's just get to it.
KTAR News. All in for the Suns in the playoffs.
All right, here is your chance. Text the word finals with an S, finals, to 411-923. Do it right now and you'll be entered to win. And you get an opportunity to win Suns tickets to a home playoff game. Text the word finals right now to 411-923. Your next chance to win is on the Chris and Joe Show in the 3 p.m. hour. But right now is your chance to enter to win tickets. Text the word finals to 411-923. All right, let's get into the topic at hand. We're going to talk about it. I think it's an important topic about taxation. I get into this a lot, and I don't want to get in the weeds, but the reality is this. Most Americans believe they're overtaxed, which I find surprising when you look at how it's broken down with the people that actually pay the majority of the income taxes or the taxes here in the United States. There's a lot of things that I think are unfair about the tax code, and we can travel down this road if you want to. The tax code has been written and rewritten and added on and deductions, and it should not take somebody that's gone to college for 4 years to figure out how an individual does their taxes. You own a home, maybe you own two homes, a car, maybe two cars, but your life isn't complicated. You earn a salary. You may have a second income with a side business you do. Why do you have to figure out with, I can deduct this much for clothing and what about this for my internet and I can rent an office from myself and I can get deductions there. And if I keep track of the fuel and the road and I drive to charitable functions, I can deduct 49 cents a mile or whatever it is. Why do we have such complicated tax codes? Why is it so hard for the average person to say, I want to pay my fair share, but I don't want to pay any more than I have to pay? That's not an unreasonable thing for a person to say, an individual, a couple, a family to say. There is a story that's out about how much money you have to earn wherever you live to make one or to earn or to take home $100,000. Now, I'll give you a compare and contrast. In the state of Florida, you have to have about $137,000, which means in federal, local, state taxes, including Social Security, Medicare, all of those things, you are going to pay about $37,000 a year in taxes. If you make $137,000, that's that threshold to take home $100,000. The most expensive state is Oregon, and it's $156,000. So you're literally paying $1,000 a week in taxes, more than $1,000 a week in taxes, between state, local, federal, Social Security, employment, all that stuff. The reason why this is important to me is none of us trust the government. I don't know anybody that trusts the government, especially when the opposition party of whatever your political beliefs are in power. And yet we continue to vote to give them more power and more of our money. We wouldn't do it in any other setting in our life. We wouldn't do it anywhere else. If it's charitable giving, if you were giving money to an organization, I talk about great organizations that I love, St. Vincent de Paul, St. Mary's Food Bank, United Food Bank, the list goes on and on. My friends from the 100 Club of Arizona just had their Boots and Badges event. They do such great work with first responder charities. But when you look at what the work they do and you say that's an organization, A, that is doing the right things, but they're doing it the right way. They're being responsible with the money that I donate. You go to St. Vincent de Paul and you volunteer at St. Vincent de Paul or St. Mary's Food Bank. And when you go in to volunteer, they're not wasting your time. You're going to do good work. You're going to feel like you've accomplished something. They're not wasting your time and they're not wasting your money when you donate. So you continue to donate. When they waver, when they get off track, when they're not doing the right things with money, if you feel like they're wasting money, you pull your money out and you say, I'll give it somewhere else. I'm going to give my charitable dollars to an organization that does things the right way. Well, here we are. We are the voters. We elect governments locally, statewide, and federally. We elect people to manage our money. We understand, and most of us agree, what the primary functions of government are. But even if we disagree what the primary functions are, the way they do it is wrong. Listen, I'm the biggest proponent of the military there is. I think the number one responsibility of our federal government is national defense. We have got to have a strong military. The Pentagon hasn't passed an audit in 7 years. Can't pass an audit. Don't know where the money went. That is unacceptable. University of Arizona had a huge problem with their budget. Somebody made huge mistakes and they were over $100 million in debt because of financial mistakes that were made. People out. President of the university out. Whether it's his fault or not, he's out. People in charge of the money, they're out, and they should be. Their job is to manage that money that's given to them in tuition and state funds to make sure that university meets its obligations, and it wasn't. Leaders out. If you had a financial planner that you worked with, I'm not talking about putting money in a 401k at work. If you invest money with someone and you give them money every month and their job is to build wealth for you, and you find out that they're not, you're going to take your money and go somewhere else. If you are someone that is a part of a trust, you have a family trust, and there's an executor of that trust, you're going to make sure that that executor isn't taking your money and squandering. You're going to make them account for every dollar that's in that trust. Why? Because it's your money. Well, here we are in this situation where you've got someone, and $156,000 is good money, but $156,000 is not wealth. You're not talking about someone that is driving around in a Rolls Royce. This is someone that's got a comfortable life paying $1,000 plus per week, over $1,000 per week in taxes. And so it goes up from there. If you're making in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year, even with deductions, even with all of the standard deductions and things you can come up with, you're paying about $10,000 a month in taxes. I want you to think about that. Someone that's making, that their gross pay is somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year, with all of the withholding, then just their federal withholding, not including the others, you are paying in federal income taxes somewhere in the neighborhood of $10,000 per month in taxes. I don't know if you think that's fair. It would be one thing if we were watching a government that ran itself like a very good charity like St. Vincent de Paul or St. Mary's Food Bank. When I say to you about St. Mary's Food Bank, they're buying five or six meals for a dollar. because of the way they buy in bulk, because of how they operate and they deal with every bit of food that comes into them, every dollar that comes into them. They're using volunteers, so they're not spending money on people. They have a bare minimum of staff that's necessary to make the place run efficiently so that they can focus on hungry people in the valley. Again, my political views are not theirs. I'm using them as an example. I'm not saying they agree with my political views. But that organization, when I say to you, they're buying this many meals for a dollar, that's a private organization. I'd much rather give my money to them to deal with hunger. When you've got St. Vincent de Paul, whose motto is to feed, clothe, house, and heal, that's their motto. And they do such a great job. They're partnering with the city of Phoenix, but they are running a housing program, transitional housing program for homeless people. When you go to their kitchens and you see that they serve thousands and thousands and thousands of meals every single day, what they're doing to help the plight of homeless people in the valley and how they're doing it by squeezing every penny out of every dollar, I'd rather have my money there than in a government program. Now, I'm not an anti-government person. I'm a small government person. But when you look at the statistics, when you now have a huge number of people that believe they're never going to own a home, 40% of renters believe they'll never own a home. It was 27% last year. We don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. That's just a fact. All right, coming up in a moment, we've got a couple of big things going on in the news we're going to catch up on. And of course, the Chris and Joe show happens 2 to 4. We'll find out what they're doing on their show next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right. We just not too long ago gave you an opportunity, if you were listening, gave you an opportunity to qualify to win Suns tickets. It'll happen again in the 3 o'clock hour because Chris and Joe are on 2 to 4. So at some point in that hour, you're going to get a chance to do it again and enter to win tickets. And joining me is Chris Merrill from the Chris and Joe show. So
yeah, I'm excited about the ticket giveaway stuff. Yeah, I've been doing that this week. So we'll have a chance to do that the rest of the week, too.
Are you a big NBA fan?
So I'm back in Arizona, which means I have to start paying closer attention again. I kind of fell off that wagon. I was a huge fan, I would say, in the 90s and early 2000s. And then I just sort of fell off the wagon.
Who was your team?
The Pistons.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were so terrible. You know, they had the great teams with Rodman and Thomas and those guys, Bill Laimbeer and such in the early 90s. And then they got terrible. And then they were pretty good again around 2005, 2006, maybe 2004, whatever it was. And then after that, I just kind of fell off.
I've been in Arizona for 30 years. So when it comes to the NBA, there are three things I like. Number one is watching the Suns win a game.
Sure.
Number two is watching the halftime show and watching Barkley and Shaq just make fools of themselves.
They're great.
It's so much fun to watch.
Oh my gosh.
And third is watching the Lakers lose on a buzzer beater like they did last night. I love those three things.
That's a true sports fan.
It's a true Arizonan person.
Right. It's like, what are your favorite teams? It's like the Suns and whoever's playing the Lakers.
Yes.
Right?
And I hate the LA Kings.
Okay.
I hate the LA Kings.
In hockey. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm
going to go on a limb here and say you also hate the LA Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. That's a given.
Pretty much anything from Los Angeles. Right? Whoever's playing, we just want them to lose.
We do.
I think if we were in Boston, we'd be saying the same thing about New York, right?
We would.
We just hate the Yankees and the Islanders or whatever. It doesn't matter. We just hate all of them.
All right. So what do you guys got coming up?
So we're going to talk about that. I think you discussed it a little bit today. The Supreme Court heard arguments over... was it arguments over being homeless in Grants Pass, Oregon, or was it arguments over spending the night in public spaces?
And that's the issue, is are they deciding, in my mind, the purity of the court would be their decision is whether or not the Oregon law is constitutional. Whether they like it or not, but Oregon is a local jurisdiction allowed to make a law unique to that area when it comes to this problem.
Right. So we'll cover that one, and we'll also talk about the different options that the justices may have. And you kind of hinted at one. Does the local government have the authority to make something that is specific to their region, right?
And so, their need.
Right. So is it a narrow ruling? I always love when they say, well, they're going to make a narrow ruling and play it safe, right? Yeah. I always love that analysis. And then we'll bring it, obviously, what the impact is here in Arizona. What does this mean to people who are, we have lots of people sleeping on the streets here, right? So is that, how did Rush used to refer to it? Was it urban exploring or urban camping.
Yeah.
Something like of the that, sort. Yeah. So we'll discuss what the impact is here locally as well.
And you look at what I feel, and I don't defend governments very often, but the city of Phoenix thought they were living up to a federal law when they weren't enforcing things at the zone. And then a Superior Court judge said, no, you've got to enforce the law. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to enforce the laws here. So they're trying to balance those. And then in comes the ACLU with a lawsuit against them. So I do understand there has to be some kind of answer, because jurisdictions have no idea what they can, can't, should, or shouldn't do.
Yeah. So will this provide clarity, or is this going to muddy the waters
even
more?
What do you think?
No, things are just going to get muddier. They are. Speaking of muddy, the abortion law in Arizona continues to get murkier and murkier as we try to figure out and navigate the ins and outs of that one right now. And a couple of judges are facing a potential recall here. Or I guess it would be a non-retention.
Correct.
Is what it would be.
Yeah.
Because people didn't like their verdicts in this case. So we'll talk about that.
And is that justified? We'll see. But it does not matter about justification. It's at the will of the people. Retain them or not retain them.
Right.
All right.
Who gets put in place?
Right. Yeah. Then the governor gets to name the appointment.
Right.
So we'll see.
So maybe there's a long game going on here.
Yeah, maybe there is.
All right. Very good.
All right. That is the ever optimistic Chris Merrill from the Chris and Joe Show. That happens 2 to 4 here on KTAR News. More chances for you to win Suns tickets as well. We are just about out of time. I'll remind you again, our show starts just after 8 a.m., so catch us whenever you can. Thanks for listening part of your day today. I'll talk again tomorrow. Until then, God bless.